Hey guys, Charlie here. A quick reminder before we kick off today's episode that Will and I are coming back to the live stage April 7th at the Basement Comedy Club in Melbourne. We're doing another TOEFOP Live. It'll be me, it'll be Will, it'll be special guest Deeksy, most likely, and you'll want to be there. There's a link in the episode description, so check it out once you've listened to this awesome show.
Production. The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax, this is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching. I hope you are watching. And if you are watching, I hope you can see Charlie's face.
Why? Oh, because he's gone hidden behind his microphone.
Yes.
No, I've been a bit quiet on some of the episodes.
Have you?
I think I have. Well, you're
have
naturally,
I been too loud?
You're naturally louder than me in general. You projection because you do stage work and stuff, I'm assuming.
I knew how to use my theatrical voice.
I speak to the people in the back of the theatre.
Uh-huh.
No, I have bad mic technique, so I've adjusted. Well, Amy came in and helped me. A mic came in and helped me adjust. I'm going to make that work. I'm going to make fetch happen.
Do it.
It helped me adjust the mic, but I felt like it was eclipsing my face.
Did you not think that you could take it in your own hands? It's like a pretty simple...
Amy clearly
judgment.
Clearly felt like I couldn't because she came in.
Yeah,
because she said, I'll adjust the mic and I adjusted it, but then she came in and adjusted it again. So
right.
I must have done something right.
That's passive
something
aggressive,
wrong.
Isn't
really
it?
Embarrassing.
Yeah.
Do you think there is a natural bias, or not a natural bias, this is a total left turn.
Yeah, good. I don't know. Well, I wasn't going anywhere anyway, so I don't know. Maybe it is exactly where I was going.
Whenever I come back to Sydney to do these shows, or in general, I love like a line bike, like a, you know, one of those.
You do love a line bike.
When I caught up at your place, I rode a line bike there. Yeah. I just love it. I think it's such a great initiative, and scooter, bike, whatever it is, I'll ride it because it's a great way to get about. It's good for the environment.
I like this new form of this podcast where it starts with you endorsing a product.
That doesn't sponsor our show.
You just come on. You do a nice little rave about a product that does not give us any money that you enjoy.
But I feel, I have noticed, it feels like there is a...
Because I thought line bikes were on the way out, or like those style of bikes.
What are they called, rideshare
Yeah, there was a moment where they all came in and then everyone was chucking them in a river or up a tree.
Yeah.
And you were like, this is, and they're all going out of business.
Now it's time for Charlie to adopt this technology.
No, but it feels like they're back a bit, right? They found their natural level.
I think they came in too early and they were too sporadic.
And the scooters now, have made a difference.
And the scooters have made a difference.
Yeah, the fact that you don't have to do all the pedaling yourself has made a difference.
Well, the bizarre thing was like it felt like Melbourne was the last city to get on board. The first place I saw like motorized scooters was Brisbane. Yeah. And I was like, this is excellent, like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I was like, Melbourne is the flattest city in the world.
Melbourne gave it a go, but everyone would chuck them in the river.
No, they're back.
Yeah, I know they're back, but I'm just saying.
Chuck them in the river. You're endorsing river chucking.
There was a big period of chucking them in the river.
It's very much that Homer Simpson thing of it's fun to smash stuff. Come on, Marge, let's smash stuff.
I think that even people who like the technology were like, yeah, but there's this river right here that we could chuck it in.
I mean, everyone's worried about the rise of AI and robots and stuff, but they're all going to get chucked in a river before they can do any damage.
Just like this is fun.
That's how Terminator 5 ends.
Chucked in a river.
Terminator's been chucked in a river. But I feel like, so I will take a line bike, you know, around the city. But I have noticed there is it's like a hostility towards people on line bikes. Like it's almost like from just general public, like
everyone.
I ride past people and.
But you're pedestrians.
Yeah. But it's not so much about, you know, the bikes, you know, it's more you're a dork for riding a line bike. Like that is
Do you have a helmet on?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, is that yes? I mean, I'm being safe.
No, that's what you're meant to do.
Yeah, right.
I'm just trying to like paint a picture.
Okay,
I'll
give you a couple of different scenarios in which I've been mocked. So about like 2 months ago, I was down for a friend's birthday, and I had to get from like Circular Quay back to like, you know, Waterloo or whatever. And there was no, I couldn't get a cab, so I was like, I'll just get a line bike. It's bike paths all the way back. And it was a Saturday night, and so every time I pulled up into an intersection, I was mocked, like bucks parties, groups of girls, whatever, just like dork, ha, ha, ha. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense because, you know, it's like they're looking for someone to make fun of.
That's low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit.
This is perfect for a bucks party or a girls' night out. Some dork on his line bike. This is gold.
But then since then, like when I rode around to your place, you know, just before Christmas, I rode past like a group of joggers and I saw them kind of like roll their eyes about the guy on the line bike. And then today, so I have spent all morning going around Sydney on a line bike. Like I started in Bondi and then I went to Clovelly, had a swim, and then I rode back into town and then came in. And I remember as I was cutting through Centennial to get back to where I was staying, I overtook a couple riding and one guy's going, oh God, now the line bike's gone past us. And I'm like, what is the issue with this very like public transport system? Like is it one of those things where, you know, when mobile phones first started and like it was kind of cool to mock people and like, ugh, as if it's some kind of like lame status symbol or you think you're better than us or whatever. Is that what's going on? That by me taking this very environmentally friendly form of transport and not getting an Uber or supporting some horrible company, that like I am making them feel worse about themselves?
This is one of those occasions where I'm not sure your personal experience is necessarily the universal experience.
You think it's me that's getting mocked?
I think it might be.
Really?
No.
I don't ride in an aggressive or lairish manner. Let me just, it's not like I'm you've got doing wheelies.
Because if you're slowing down enough for people to mock you is the problem.
I heard that, like when I rode past the guy today who was like, ugh, line bike's overtaking us. I was like, I almost wanted to stop and say, what's up?
Yeah, but how?
What's up? Drop the bike. Come on, bro. Rip my shirt off. Come at me, bro.
But how do you know in that circumstance that her dismissal is about the line bike and not about his, like that feels to me when you are relaying that story, like this guy and whoever he's like cycling with is disappointed at the speed at which they are cycling and their aptitude for cycling. And now they're embarrassed because they've been overtaken by a line bike, which is a bike that is built more for getting you about town rather than for speed. And so you've taken something where they've like, they're not harumphing at the line bike. They're harumphing at themselves in comparison to the line bike.
I think there is a hostility to people on line bikes. People who are not delivering
food and
stuff.
These same streets that you are a visitor to at the moment.
You live in.
I'm living these streets.
And
man.
You don't.
I'm walking
do you
these
ever
streets.
Have? Do you have any strong feelings about people on those hire bikes?
And I walk on those same paths that you would have ridden, like often. And I catch the light rail, which is nearby to there.
Is it a thing where you look like a tourist? Is that the issue? Do I look like a tourist?
Yeah, I mean, there's
a dorky tourist.
There's an element of that, I think.
Right.
They're like, but also, I think everyone's judgy of everybody else's form of transport because none of it's convenient to anybody else, right? And so there's this, they keep us fighting between each other, Charlie, so that we don't fight the real enemy, big public transport.
Well, I got, because I overtook a bunch of like weekend cyclists on the way here as well.
Yeah. Well,
and
even
they
that,
were shitty.
Weekend cyclists, right?
But they were shitty at me. And it's like, I mean, come
you're
on, man.
You're weekend cyclists, man.
Live
you're
and let
the
live.
Ones that people get shitty at.
I know.
You don't get to
don't
be shitty at other
me.
People. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. We all pick a target. We all pick someone down the chain that we can all roll our eyes at. And you were, so maybe spin it in a different way. What does it hurt you? It doesn't hurt you that people roll their eyes at you or get
that
a little bit of like, you know, like maybe you're actually kind of doing them a service in that you let them vent a little bit of this pent-up anger they have about general life and society. And you,
I think it might,
speeding by on your line bike with living your good life, seeing all your friends.
Yeah,
going for a swim.
Yeah.
You know, popping around. You know what? You've just given them an opportunity to roll their eyes a little, and that's fine.
Is
you
it
just,
though?
Yes.
I don't want to be the target of their derision.
Well, stop living your life how you are.
Conform to other people's expectations.
Stop flying so close to the sun.
I mean, I think you might be right in the sense there could be a bit of projection going on where I feel a little bit self-conscious about being a dork on a line bike. Like, for instance...
Yeah, you're putting a case together. Whereas those individual incidents, some of them may have been rolling their eyes. Who knows for what reason. But you've collected yourself a little case and a story that you've made in your own head. Yeah. And then when you've overtaken two people struggling on their, you know,
pedal bikes and I'm on this e-bike that they like. Yeah. I mean, I think I did notice a shift today though, like in getting into the studio, I didn't wear a helmet because I'm like, I want to see if this changes people's attitudes. And it definitely made a difference. So I think it might just be the helmet.
Yeah. People
see when you protect people protect your skull, you know, like, want to be around my daughter as
look
long
at
as
you,
I can.
You nerd.
That's what it is though. The law people fucking hate
and wanting
nerds.
To live for
they don't they? They hate a nerd. Yeah. They hate someone who does the right thing. Like, we're a country of larrikins, mate.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, heaps of rules.
Yeah. But don't try and have a public event without 700 like regulations and forms you've got to fill out.
Don't you dare try and follow them, you nerd.
Now, Will, it's Oscar season, Oscar fever. The Oscars were
weren't they great?
Amazing, wonderful.
Or terrible.
So good. And that opening number by Billy Crystal,
that thing,
fantastic.
That controversial thing that happened, I imagine.
Can you believe that so-and-so got slapped by so-and-so?
I can now.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, it's
the thing that happens most years.
We are recording this a week before the Oscars or 2 weeks before the Oscars. It would be amazing if there was like another slapping. Like it's become, that's the tradition.
I was thinking about this the other day.
No more opening monologues, just one slapping.
But not even just the slapping because, you know, there was the reading out the wrong winner.
Yep, Warren Beatty.
Right. There's been the slap.
Yep.
It's kind of become, oh, it's the Oscars, something of like
note.
Enormous note, some big scandal or whatever is going to happen.
Should
it's almost
look into
part of the
crystal ball.
Charlie, just for the people who are not watching the video, this is just rubbing his glass.
Rubbing a glass. My jug.
His mason jar of
my
water.
My jar of water. What is likely? Okay, so the big talking point, obviously,
yeah, what's the
controversy
big
is that like
because I've not watched any
Margot
movies,
and
so.
Greta were snubbed.
Yeah, well, they weren't though. Was she? Greta was nominated for something. She just wasn't nominated for
best director.
Right.
Yeah. So I reckon it's a good chance that maybe Ryan the
Goz wins. Baby
gets up and says, Luke Beveridge style.
Oh yeah.
Greta, come up on stage.
Yeah.
I want you to have this.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's fake. Like, that's the original famous Oscars thing, right? Isn't it? Like, who was it who sent it along the.
Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando. So.
Then sent the Native American girl.
Ryan Gosling is
sends
like a modern
Greta
day,
up
sends
to
Greta
get.
Sends Greta up to accept the award.
And she refuses it. And then she sends Margot up. And Margot refuses it. And she
as
sends
well.
Up someone else. And it's just an endless
America
parade of people.
Ferreira. Yeah. And then John Cena. And he accepts it.
Yeah, he would too. How good is it that The Rock is back as a bad guy? We were texting while I was away about this. So for people who aren't familiar with the wrestling, The Rock started his career as a good guy, but then quickly found his feet as a heel, and that's not what launched him into stardom as a wrestler. So what's happened in the wrestling is they brought him – he's become a board member of the WWE, and they brought him back as a big-ticket attraction for WrestleMania, thinking that everyone would love it.
Yes.
But it turns out people don't love that because they've been putting all their – eggs in one basket, which is Cody Rhodes, who's this new baby face. And so in an amazing pivot, they went from putting The Rock into WrestleMania as the good guy to going, oh, hang on, the fans hate this. How can we arrest this? And so they very smartly.
Just before, okay. Now, you say what it is first, and then I've got a question to ask you about it.
So in a matter of a week, they turned it around where The Rock then slapped the good guy and is now officially a heel. And so
This is the point I just want to ask the question, which is how, because you've watched a lot of documentaries about how they do the WWE and like, you know, how the storylines are put together and how much planning there is versus how much they're proactive to what the reactions are. So my question is about that, which is, would they have gone into this thinking we've got like a political party would and they go, there's a couple of ways this could go. We're bringing The Rock back. There could be, or is this one of these things where you think they went into this knowing there'd be a chance that The Rock would have to do a heel turn, or have they just, because The Rock is a big Hollywood movie star who did play this heel character in the wrestling, but essentially went back in as that first appearance that we talked about on the podcast at playing that Hollywood persona. We referenced the fact that, you know, he was joking about his own movies and it didn't quite feel like it was 100% working.
Yeah.
And then there was this real pushback against it.
Mm.
And the storyline, they've flipped it to him like
being
really embracing it and being the bad guy. And it feels much more comfortable and exciting and interesting.
And the fans are happy, so they're kind of like, everyone gets their cake. And
for The Rock, couldn't have worked out better 100%. Because this is exactly what he needed. So do you think they went into this because they know the history of wrestling and how things could be going, this is one of the possible scenarios that could happen? Or do you think this really took them by surprise that there was such a big backlash and they just had the courage to immediately recognize, because of his wrestling background, that this was an opportunity to dive into something that I think will actually end up being a much better
100% the latter.
Yeah.
Because the whole reason they brought him in was because originally the WrestleMania title card was going to be CM Punk and Brock Lesnar in the main events. Brock Lesnar obviously is caught up in the whole Vince McMahon thing, so he's not on the card. CM Punk got injured. So out of desperation, they're like, we need an attraction. So they brought The Rock in, expecting, oh, well, we can put him in the main event against, you know, his nephew or cousin or whatever Roman Reigns is. But then they weren't anticipating the backlash. So they scrambled very hard to then pivot and very smartly just sort of read where the fans wanted it to go. And in retrospect, it's like a much better idea.
Much better. That's why I guess I asked that question, is like, how much of this is them knowing that it can go a couple of different ways and then pursuing it, or them just so steeped in the language of how wrestling works and how to adapt to a situation like that, that they just did what was the natural thing to do in that situation, which was, because you can just imagine in the world of wrestling, of course, that's great. You go to heel in that moment, but he's not just a wrestler anymore.
Yeah.
He's
a brand.
A brand, and this, like, you know, family brand, and this guy who was like the biggest superstar on the planet for a while. And to be a proper heel in the world of wrestling, like, there is going to be a cognitive dissonance or something between the mainstream coverage of what is going on in the world of wrestling. Like, people who follow wrestling will understand what is happening and be excited about it and think, oh, this is amazing. Whereas the way it reports over into the mainstream media is that, like, yeah, The Rock's back in the wrestling and everybody hates him, without the understanding of
it's a work.
That this is great.
Yeah.
Like, this is what they're doing. This is the whole bit.
Yeah.
So there is a risk of loss of personal reputation by people not really understanding, you know, what is going on, right?
Yeah.
So to take that risk is...
Well, it's funny. The right wing, some members of, like, sort of the right wing in America have... It's so funny. Like, America's such a fucking crazy country. Have used the kayfabe of The Rock being a bad guy to try and attack, like, you know, Oprah Winfrey. So what they did is they took footage of The Rock being booed at the wrestling and said, oh, this is because The Rock and Oprah funneled relief funds from Hawaii. And, like, and I've never seen The Rock do this before, but he was like, fucking hang on. Like,
come on.
Like, normally I don't respond to this kind of shit, but they're not booing me. A, the funds got to where they needed to go, but B, it's fucking wrestling. Like, it's made up. Like, I'm not actually a bad guy. This is the theater of what we do. But it's just like, what a fucking country where, like, this is so clearly, like, everyone knows that it's not real. And that's, we all suspend our disbelief so we can enjoy it. But there's going to be some, like, sections of, like, the right-wing commentators are like, oh, this is a great way to, you know, to damage the Democrat brand or the left-leaning brand.
So there is a lot on the line, is my point. Mm. So the fact that they've had the courage to do it, it could be the best thing that's, you know, because we can all see what's happening with The Rock. The Rock's like a big tech company.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock's Facebook or Apple or whatever, you know? They get to the top because they're this, like, challenger thing that just keeps seeing the possibility in every step about the way, and they had this, like, incredible product. But they, you know, then after a while, like, not everybody has, like, you know, you get one Facebook, you get one iPhone. You don't necessarily, you know, every time you go to up to bat again, like, you know, hit another home run. And The Rock was a bit like that. It all built until he was this incredible, ubiquitous, they can't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's always going to be upward for The Rock trajectory. And then there's just been this period recently of, like, oh, we thought we were going to, like,
we were going to go float on the stock exchange.
Yeah. Well, we thought, you know, it was going to be the vision thing and everyone was going to wear Google glasses or whatever. And then suddenly it didn't work out and you're like, oh, we've brought out a smaller or bigger iPhone.
Like, whatever you want. Just tell us what you want, monkeys.
what do you want now? More lenses, I guess? And it felt like he was scratching around in a, you know, bigger, smaller you know, more lenses world. And then suddenly an opportunity has presented itself in the wrestling to actually do something that is very fun and very
well. The interesting part of it is how such a big mainstream star marries what is essentially the circus.
Yeah.
Of, like, you know, professional wrestling, even though it's a very mainstream, you know, sanitized product, but it's still carny, you know, it's got that carny atmosphere to it. It's a bit weird and not everyone gets it. Marrying that with the dude who is the most risk adverse entertainer in the world. Like, I'm sure there was a period of time where he was like, oh, it'd be kind of good if people didn't go back and look at, you know, the stuff I did earlier because it's a bit edgy. But now him embracing that with the full force of like the Hollywood star factory behind him to see how he can marry that. But I think the way he's marrying it is just by compartmentalizing very clearly. Yeah. When I'm doing I'm The Rock. Yeah. And when I'm not, I'm Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, which was the better thing. That's why I think it works better than the original thing when he came back as the, because he's referencing his Hollywood movies and stuff. You're like, you're not that person. Like,
yeah.
It's easier to delineate the character with him playing this heel turn, but it's also funny. And it plays to the storyline that they seem to have already had going. It now adds to that storyline and makes it more interesting and compelling, right?
Yeah. Like,
so, yeah, I mean, it's been, I mean, but, you know, we're speaking about this a couple of weeks out from, so who knows what's happened by now. And also, I know, like, I mean, I was not, because I don't follow the wrestling behind the scenes as much, but I listened to that old Behind the Bastards, six-part episode on Vince McMahon. And, you know, in light of the latest horrible, you know, allegations and revelations that had come out about him, like it had been referenced in a few of those things as being, and so I was like listening to that. And I mean, incredible, like kind of look at the history of wrestling as well and how many dark corners that it does have. And as you said, like for someone else for The Rock even to be going back into that at this time when like that stuff is becoming more and more.
It's actually interesting because as recording this, Elimination Chamber happened in Perth yesterday, which is like, you know, one of their big pay-per-view events. Well, that's not pay-per-view anymore these days, but it's been interesting hearing like, it's so bizarre because they will do a press conference with the wrestlers and they'll talk about the matches as if, you know, like it was a legitimate contest and stuff like that. But then they'll also get questions about, well, you know, how do you respond to the allegations against Vince? And so, on one hand, it's the show and they're responding in character, and then they have to shift and respond as the human being or the, you know, the person, the performer, whoever they are. And it's like, it's such the allegations are so horrendous and so horrible. And like the evidence seems quite like irrefutable at the moment, at least, you know, like they have text messages and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. And when you listen to this like podcast series, you realize
it's a pattern of behavior.
A pattern of behavior for a very long time.
And it's weird too, because like it's one of those things of hiding in plain sight, a bit like the Jimmy Savile thing, because he was such a big personality who was like, you know, aggressive and loud and all this kind of stuff, and literally played a gigantic cartoon villain like in the wrestling in the late 90s and stuff. And so then to find out that this stuff was happening in real life, it's like, it's not a huge shock in a way.
No. And I mean, obviously, I mean, look, you know, we are not the first, but I mean, you look at it, Trump's America, right? Mm. Like it is, I mean, Trump is Vince McMahon. He came from the wrestling. He was in the, so much of what he does
is inspired by wrestling promotion.
Right. And like, you know,
be loud, be controversial, be unrepentant,
and do it all in plain sight. You've seen the way that he's handled, like, I mean, the fact that he is just out there running for president with like 91. Every day there's like a new sort of charge or allegation or like,
fine, right? Pay,
like every day there seems to be a story.
But doesn't it make you go like, fucking hell, like, why do I pay parking fines?
Right.
Why do I do anything? Clearly you can just keep rolling on.
Run for president.
But I don't know, like, it just...
Like, when someone seems to be running for president so they can pardon themselves of all the crimes they've committed, it's bold, right? But it's very wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, is that idea of, like, you're hiding in plain sight.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
Or wearing these things as a badge of honor.
That's right.
And that they can cover
it. Like, yeah, it's more that, isn't it? It's about creating, they hate me, so I'm going to get support because the people who hate me, you hate.
Yeah.
So if you hate them, then support me because I'm taking them on, even though what I'm really trying to do is save my own ass.
Yeah, that's right.
I actually don't give a fuck about you guys. Yeah,
at all. I've just committed a lot of crimes. And the only way out of those crimes, it turns out, is being president.
I mean, it's just...
What a system.
It's so bizarre, isn't it? Like, to think that we could be back there again in 6 months. Like, I was caught up with a mate today who's an actor, and he's like, he's working on a show at the moment, and then his management in the States, like, I'll come back to the States. And he's like, can I just wait? Can I just see what happens in November to see if I want to go back? Because I was talking to another friend who lives in L.A., and I said to him, are you getting, like, is the stuff that we're seeing in the news and the tension that seems to be apparent in all the reporting, is it evident on the street? Like, if you're just walking around, are you aware? And he said, yes. Like, it is very evident that there is, it's a country with a lot of, like, political tension at the moment. So it's like, what's going to happen? Especially when there's a guy, like, the amazing thing is you've got two, a leader, like a Republican nominee and a Democrat nominee who no one seems to like either of them. And the polling seems to suggest that if it was anyone else, either Republican or Democrat, anyone else, they would win in a landslide. Yeah. Yet no one else is being offered up. Like, it just seems like the biggest no-brainer.
Seems like a weird system, doesn't it?
A weird, really weird system. Where you and
the one thing all of us can agree on is we prefer someone other than these two.
Yeah.
And Robert F. Kennedy is like, I don't believe in vaccines. What about me? I'm a Kennedy.
I mean, you've lived there for a while.
Yes.
Well, how long? About 10 years?
10 years.
On and off, right?
Yeah, on and off. 5 years total, over 10 years.
And did you notice like a decline?
I mean, honestly, I say to people, like, I mean, part of the reason that I came back, not the only reason, but part of the reason that I came back was literally, I was just like,
the wheels are falling
off. Yeah, right? It's like,
we're just grinding actual at this
stage. Doesn't
feel
like the time to be signing up to more of this, you know? And particularly when you're like, this is not my thing, I can't, like, me being here is not helping this, and it's certainly not helping me. Like, you know, this feels like it's falling apart, and it feels like the end of an empire, or an empire in that's just completely out of control.
Like, 300 million people is a lot of people. It feels like, you know, the only way to control, like, people of that size is through strong arms.
When none of them, like, they all just disagree with each other.
And it's so culturally different from state to state.
All over the place.
Yeah.
And they're all being told by each other that they're all lying to each other and that they're all enemies of each other. Like, I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it would be entertaining if it wasn't so scary.
I mean, it's terrifying because they've got most of the bombs.
Weapons, yeah. Like, and the biggest military in the world.
The biggest military in the world. And, like, I mean, obviously, welcome to our foreign affairs podcast.
To foreign affairs. We did bring up films, Oscars before, and in my little break, I did have a chance to catch up on quite a few films.
Great.
So I want to, I've done some one-line reviews on a bunch of different films.
Brilliant.
I watched the new Mission Impossible film. What's it called? Mission Impossible... Renegade, Mission Impossible.
Part Dead one. Reckoning.
Dead Reckoning.
That's Dead one.
I have
Reckoning,
no idea.
Part one.
I know it didn't do very well.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed it. I enjoy all.
From what I've heard, it didn't do well because it's a part one and part ones don't do that well. People wait until the part two comes out. And the other thing is that, is there not like a, like, is it not an AI or something?
It's a MacGuffin. It's some AI.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's almost the MacGuffin, the device that everyone's chasing. Yes, it's an AI thing that is controlling people's minds. It's almost like, remember in the 80s when there'd be a film like Electric Dreams or Weird Science? It's like, computers are magical.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is dumb. Like, what are you talking about? So it's got an element of that. But my one-line review of Dead Reckoning is, at terminal velocity, Tom Cruise's plastic surgery looks weird.
Okay.
So he does a big skydiving sequence.
Yeah.
And, like, he looks great for most of the film. Again, all his own stunts and stuff. But that he's been very patient and he's been very incremental in his surgery, like just little bits here and there. Yeah. And so you just haven't noticed. He's just looked like Tom Cruise his whole career. But when you are falling at terminal velocity and his skin is getting blown back, you're like, whoa, you feel like you are seeing how the sausage is made.
Oh, I mean, there was a photo of him at the tennis or something. Yeah, I do you remember that? That? Yeah. Now, I think that was the moment where we all saw behind the, you know, saw that the Wizard of Oz wasn't perhaps the magical wizard that we were all thinking he might have been.
It's, I mean, it's total, those Mission Impossible films, I think, have only, like, they're great. Like, they after 3 or 4, they started getting really good.
Yeah.
But it's, I feel like they crammed too much story into them. Like, there's all this intrigue and, you know, spy versus spy and all that kind of stuff, when really, it's just like, if John Wick taught us anything, it's like we want to see, like, action sequences with just a thin amount of plot in between connecting them.
You know what they should do in the very final, you know what the last scene of the final ever Mission Impossible should be?
What?
I've got it in my head right now. So what's his name? Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hunt has finally been, it's his final, Mission Impossible,
he's
colon, Mission Impossible, colon, final mission.
Yeah.
Is what this is called.
Mission Impossible, final mission.
Yeah, Mission Impossible, final mission. So he dies.
Mission unaccepted.
He dies at the end.
Yeah.
And when he dies, someone goes up to his face and they peel off his face, his modern Tom Cruise face, and his old Tom Cruise face is underneath.
That'd be brilliant. Yeah. You know what I was thinking watching it is like Ving Rhames just must thank his lucky stars.
What else is he doing? Does he just do that?
I think
those
he
movies?
Just does those films. And all he has to do is like sit in a comfy chair and be like, oh, I've unlocked the door, Ethan.
It's like, amazing, isn't it? That you just like,
look behind you, Ethan. They're coming, Ethan.
You've got to think that Ving Rhames could be working more than Ving Rhames works.
Why bother?
That's what I feel like Ving.
I mean, Simon Pegg's in the same boat, really. Yeah. Like, he doesn't have, they make Simon Pegg do more. Like, he does some action-y kind of stuff as well. But Ving Rhames just sits in a comfy chair and says, they're coming, Ethan. Yeah. Look behind you, Ethan. The door's unlocked, Ethan.
I mean, and wasn't there a point when he was kind of one of the other action leads in it? Like, a bit earlier on, wasn't Ving doing more sort of...
I was thinking about that. So the very first one, right, that was, wasn't it like Emilio Estevez was the original Simon Pegg?
Emilio Estevez was definitely in it.
Yeah. But I can't remember when Ving came into it. But it's like occasionally, I guess you just hit on it. It's like if you're in the Fast and the Furious, right? Like Jordana Brewster. Mm-hmm. She must be just like awesome. Like another Fast and Furious thing.
I'd love to just be in something.
An ensemble where you don't really have to
That's
do that
what
much.
I mean. Like where it's like where you're the
good
just...
joke, Dom. Well, another Corona Dom.
Yeah, correct. Could I what's a good Australian
franchise?
Like there isn't really any Mad
Crocodile
Max.
Dundee.
Crocodile Dundee. I could just be like, nice one, Mick.
Yeah. Here's your knife, Mick. Is this the knife? This is a knife, Mick. I don't know. Yeah, I guess it would be Mad Max. That would be the most viable one.
Yeah.
And you could be in that because they love freaks and weirdos.
True. And they could just make up me up, right? You know what I mean? Like,
and you're fucking mates with George.
They use like people who are like, you know, like rock star from other areas of life.
Angry
like,
Anderson, Tina Turner.
Exactly. It's actually part of the... So I could rock
I can
up.
Imagine The Wasteland, there's a comedian.
Quentin was in Fury
Road. That's right. Nathan Jones.
Yes.
Not the footballer, the wrestler.
Yes.
Although Nathan Jones, a footballer, would also be good.
Yeah, that's you could definitely be in that universe.
Yeah, I could see you in that. And I think that in The Wasteland.
Why have I not been in that?
Because what George Miller's done amazingly since Fury Road is create this world, right? There is like there's societal norms and there's systems of government and there's trading and stuff. So in that world, there would be entertainment.
Iota's playing guitar on the front of the...
Why couldn't there be some Wasteland freak telling jokes?
Exactly.
Just a scene. And you'd have to do it in that pidgin English that they use. Like, it wouldn't be knock knock. It'd be like tap knock.
Yes.
Who is that?
Yes.
Or you could do it like ostentation.
Or just like wordplay about stuff.
Exactly.
Like,
I'm wasted land or something like that. Don't be so mad, Max. Wilstentatious. Okay, next film. Uh-huh. I saw Wonka. I watched Wonka.
Yeah.
Have you seen Wonka?
Yeah. So, like, I've been to post-pandemic, I can tell you, I've been to the movies twice. since the pandemic.
Yeah.
And one of them was the Spider-Man.
Across the Spider-Verse.
Across the Spider-Verse
2.
Loved it. And the other one was
Wonka.
Wonka. And I went to see Wonka because I have a bit of material about Roald Dahl books and them censoring Roald Dahl books. And I was considering doing it for something. And I was like, you know what? I better go and see this movie just in case there's something in this or I can leverage it as a bit. So I went in the middle of the day to Gold Class in the summer on a hot day. I thought, oh, this is nice. I'll get out of the hot and I'll go and watch Wonka. And I was not aware.
There was a musical.
I knew there was going to be music, right? The original one has music.
Too much
good music. But this one has a lot of music.
A lot of music.
It's mostly music.
It's part of that secret musical thing that studios do now where they don't let you know it's a musical.
But this is like, late. I've seen musicals that didn't have as much music as this one. Like, it's a lot of music. They're singing most of the time.
Yeah.
And I quite liked it.
Okay.
But there's only like one and a half good songs in it, and they sing like so many songs.
My one word review of Wonka is that there's not enough words that rhyme with chocolate because every song they would try and come up with a rhyme for chocolate, and it's like there's not enough, and stop trying. Like, you hate a slant rhyme clearly. And that would be
chocolate. Don't knock it.
It's a chocolate.
Yeah, I know.
We bought a bottle of it with the chocolate. And it's like, no, that doesn't work. Just like come up with something else. There's
just
not enough words to rhyme with chocolate.
To chock and rhyme it with rock and cock and you're done.
Have a look at my cock. And then bite on some chalk. I think I hated it. I just was like, this is, I just found it. I think what they got wrong.
Was?
And this is. Well, it's the same with the fucking Ghostbusters reboot, is that the original Ghostbusters was a comedy. It was a Saturday Night Live comedy. It's not meant to be taken seriously. And then all the reboots have been so reverential about, like, the proton packs and the Ecto-1. And it's like, the tone's wrong. Mm-hmm. Willy Wonka is not a hero. Willy Wonka in the original film is a villain. He hates children and he tests children and he wants children to fail. This Willy Wonka loves a street urchin and wants to bring chocolate to the world. It's a complete misreading of what the character is.
Unless there's like a Empire Strikes Back style dark chapter in between.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
Right? Where we see this character, this Willy Wonka,
He accidentally murders a child in his factory and then realizes he has a taste for blood.
Murdering children. I love murdering children.
Just,
and then it's just
starts pushing
like
them into
it's
the chocolate.
Hannibal style Silence of the Lambs.
If they want to go that direction where there's
like every movie in the franchise is
another horrific child murder.
Well, no, like, you know, isn't there some like there's a really famous example of it, but basically this is my horror film and this is my action film and this is my, so if you took Wonka and then every chapter in the Wonka thing, you're like, okay, well that's the Paddington, you know, Wonka musical. Like it's a musical.
Yep.
We've done Wonka. It's a musical, but the next one is like a gritty Silence of the Lambs style.
Yeah. Like, or Hostel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Like a proper
porn.
Dial it up.
Yeah.
Get James Wan and Lee Whannell involved to do
Eli
Wonka.
Roth presents Wonka.
So different chapters of Wonka, but like done in like boldly different stylistic choices.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I just found the whole thing like, because I love the Paddington movies too.
Yes.
Like that, the director Paul White or Paul Wright, I can't remember his name. He's the Boosh. He directed the Boosh TV series.
The Mighty Boosh?
The Mighty Boosh. Uh-huh. Isn't it called the Boosh? Or was it called the Mighty Boosh?
I believe they were the Mighty
Boosh. Mighty Boosh.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. I apologize to you Boosh heads out there.
I mean, I was just trying to be funny, like as if there was another Boosh that you were. Right. That was all I was going with. The Amuse Boosh?
So I think he's an amazing director and the pairing of the material, like it's kind of, have you seen Wonka, Mike?
I have.
What did you think?
I thought it was perfectly serviceable as like a holiday family film. But
yes, if
perfectly serviceable as a holiday.
That's going on the poster,
film.
Isn't it? The Blu-ray release.
Oh boy,
that's the studio Oscar campaign. Perfectly serviceable.
Perfectly
like a screwdriver. It's perfectly. It does a job. I think if Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the Gene Wilder version, didn't exist, then absolutely, what a whimsical, fun tale. But you can't get. Like, if it was a completely unique, like, everyone hates the Tim Burton version, but at least he tried to do something different. Like, there's not a lot of the same kind of, like, there's not a lot of the same, like, costumes or even music or anything. It's a different version of Willy Wonka. But yeah. This tries to say, this is a young Gene Wilder, this is the same universe, but it's a completely different character.
But you could
which comes back to your point, yeah, when did he turn evil?
But you could see that young character, right? Those who become most disillusioned, right? The idea with the Willy Wonka from the Gene Wilder Willy Wonka is not a person who hates children. It's a person who has come to hate children, right? Mm. Like, because he still loves Charlie. He wants to test them. Like, he's lost faith that, like, you know, it's something.
He wants to see what, is there still good in the world?
Yeah. The only person who wants to do that is someone who once believed there was so much good in the world and at some stage had that taken away from them. It's not someone who's never believed it to be the case, right? Mm. So there is room for an incident between, I think there's a way of the character who is in Wonka
bridging the
becoming
gap
the character who is, because I think that you have to be that idealistic about
he has to get
all
betrayed by the street
something
urchin.
Has to happen.
What's
yeah.
her name? It begins with a Z. No, Beans. No.
Zendaya.
Noodle. Noodle.
Noodle Beans.
Noodle is
Zendaya
the
Noodle Beans.
The street. Zendaya is not in
no,
it.
No, you, oh, you said June. It started with Z. Right. I was like Zendaya.
I think that's a plot twist. It was and Z they thought was an N. Noodle has to betray Willy for him to hate children. Yeah. Like,
that's right.
She's the original Charlie.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Exactly.
Like, he gives her the keys to the factory, or let's be partners, and she betrays Noodle him and betrays starts Cadbury. Him.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. She's a and you know what? Yeah. She starts Nestle because they're the ones who are fucking, aren't Nestle like buying up water reserves and stuff
right.
like that?
That's right. Starts baby formula.
Baby formula to Africa and stuff like Wonka. That.
Takes a Wonka recipe and makes it into baby formula to sell to Africa.
All right. What's my next one word review? Is Blue Beetle, I watched. We urgently need a superhero film amnesty. Any films that are in development now, studios, just hand in your scripts, we'll destroy them.
Yep.
No questions asked.
Audiences have decided that anyway.
Yeah.
Like, no one's watching anything.
Yeah.
Matt.
It's not even a bad movie. It's just like, do you realize we've seen this?
Yeah.
We've seen this exact story like 4 times.
Yes.
Doesn't matter how talented or charming your cast is, we've seen this and it's no longer interesting.
No one's interested. If we're not interested, no
doesn't matter
interested.
If you gender swap, if you ethnically swap, stop swapping things. It doesn't matter. We've seen it all.
We need a break.
We need a break. we just need some time off.
We just need to chill
I just need
out.
To just think for a bit and need some time on my own.
Stop.
It's really, it's so boring and uninteresting. And I like
we just
all
need
the
a
cast.
Clean break. We can't be dragging it out like this.
Yeah.
Like, this is destroying what love we used to have
and,
for each
and this
other.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Like, we were the biggest cheerleaders. Yeah. For it. And now it's like we made it. I'd like
we
to apologize.
We were so wrong.
If we in any way contributed.
I don't think we did, but if we did.
I think it's also like this part of this is the word infantilizing of like popular culture, which is like, oh, you guys like this? Well, here's the freaking dumbest version of this you can ever have. I still think there's interesting things happening within the superhero space, like The Boys
Probably.
Or comic strips and whatever. But it's the stuff that we thought we wanted. We don't want it.
We don't want it.
We reject it. I'm so sorry. Like, my consent is no longer enthusiastic.
But that's why we should never be
now.
Left to our own devices. We're terrible. It's
and
like,
making decisions.
Yes. I mean, it's like first year of uni, somebody eating buckets of chicken every night, you know, like drinking slabs of beer. Like, you're like, I'm in charge now. You shouldn't be. You're making terrible decisions.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but Madame Web, I understand, is like the worst film ever to be made.
I mean, that almost got me interested again because of that.
How bad
I was like,
it is.
Because I haven't watched any of this phase.
Yeah.
So I actually am quite, I've been having my own break from superhero films. I can't actually remember the last thing that I would have, what's come out? Like, what would have been, I didn't see Guardians 4.
There was an Ant-Man.
Did not
Guardians
see that.
Guardians 3, not 4.
Did not see that.
I saw Guardians 3, did which not. I enjoyed, but I can't remember anything about it.
What else has happened? I saw Lady Hulk, She-Hulk.
Yeah, I watched that.
Yeah, that's the one. I reckon that's the only one I've seen.
I think there was a bunch of stuff that came out.
Yeah.
There would have been DC stuff, right? But
Aquaman 2, that
Oh, yes,
burner.
Aquaman 2 came out.
Did not see Aquaman 2. What did you see?
Just Worm Burner.
Worm
no,
burner.
That, What's that
worm
barn burner? Burner.
Barn burner. Like, I was like,
what's
worm
that, is
burner?
That a new character?
Actually, now him like I can get into.
Just worm burner, I quite like. Well, they've announced the Fantastic Four, right?
Oh, they're God. So I'm saying, it's an amnesty. Destroy all the scripts. Destroy all the production art, everything, previs, sequences. Just get rid of it all. We don't want it. We don't want it.
Is this... No, this will save it, though. It's...
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, Fantastic Four. It's
Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like it'll work. Great.
It's exhausting.
They've got Cousin from The Bear in it.
And like James Gunn's shooting a new Superman and they're probably doing a Batman 2.
Why are they doing
like
all this? Stop it for a bit.
Amnesty.
Just stop it.
Hand in the scripts. We'll burn them.
Just have a stop.
And I want comic books to continue. That's fine.
Yes.
Comic books continue.
Yeah, but like
we need new
let's
ideas.
Build up some ideas.
Yeah, let's build up some ideas.
Let's have
it's
a
like
break.
It's like if you masturbate every day. Yeah. It gets harder and harder each time,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah.
Just have a break for a week. You'll be surprised with what happens.
Right.
Okay, my next one-word review, The Exorcist Believer. My one-line review is, the devil is the most sympathetic character. Now, do you know anything about this new Exorcist film? What's scarier than one possessed teenage girl?
Two possessed
teenage girls.
I never found The Exorcist scary in the first place.
Okay, you would.
Never thought it was a like particularly.
Okay. Like, I am the target market. Raised Catholic. Always.
Yeah, perfect for you.
Terrified of The Exorcist. The idea that such an innocent person could be overtaken by an evil entity has always been terror. Now.
By the way, I forgot to tell you this. So, like, I was doing my improvised show in Port Macquarie, and I won't name the man in the audience because he's a teacher at a local Catholic school, and I didn't want to, like, you know, like there was a point in the improvisation that I stopped improvising because I was like, oh, yeah, you know, it's a small community.
Yeah.
don't have to lose your job based on this. Yeah, we're just having a fun night out. I can't remember what the exact thing was that I said. It was something about guilt or being Catholic or whatever. And I said, oh, yeah, I've got a friend who gets most of his guilt from being raised Catholic. And he goes, Charlie Clawson. And I was like, that's actually that was who I was thinking of. You're right. So there you go.
I was actually saying to Jem, like, I don't know what we're talking about, but I was like, look, you know, there's a lot of negative things about being raised Catholic, but I do feel like there is a moral grounding that I appreciate. And one of those things is putting others' needs before your own. And Jem's like, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, no, you want to be compassionate to others, but always putting people in front of you, that's a bad thing. That's not something that you should encourage.
It's honestly something that my therapist talks about a lot. And I didn't get it from the Catholics, but I got it. I found it somewhere, picked it up for myself.
Okay, so it actually starts off, I love a horror film.
Yeah.
Love the Exorcist original film. But it's like...
So I can't even remember really what the Exorcist... Like, is so that the original, one where, like, they're strapped to the bed?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all, like, demonic possession.
That's right. And to this, like, to even as a grown-up, if you change someone's voice and give them glowing red eyes, it still... It makes me scared.
Yes.
Like, I can't help it. It just scares me. But the original Exorcist was, like, just the ultimate in 70s filmmaking. In the 70s when every film was just, like, grounded in realism and everything was nihilistic and dark and stuff. And so... This film starts off quite well, and it's really about, in the same way that Talk to Me is about grief and about, like, you know, losing a parent. That's what this is about. You know, a teenage girl whose mother died in childbirth. She's now turning 13. The metaphor is like kids hit teenagedom, they change all of a sudden. You know, she's getting flooded with hormones and stuff. In this instance, she wants to contact her dead mother, but that opens a doorway to the devil. And so the first 20 to 30 minutes, especially as a father of a young girl, you know, it's really a story about a single dad trying to raise his teenage girl, and he loves her, but there's certain things he can't do for her because he just doesn't get the head of a teenage girl. And so I was invested in the first 20 minutes. But then when the devil comes in, so she and her friend go off into the woods to do a satanic rite, you know, or some kind of, you know, satanic rite, and they both get possessed by the devil. And so then they come back to their small town. And so you got one, you got the dad, the single dad who's kind of an atheist and doesn't believe in anything, and he's trying to work out what's going on. And then the other girl is in a fundamentalist Christian family, like a Seventh-day Adventist or something like that. And so they're all very, like, you know, I was going to say Charlie Church. I don't know if that's the right term. But then, So as the girls get more and more like possessed by the devil and acting out and being all creepy and weird and stuff, the film's message is that, hey man, you know, to drive out the devil, you don't need just one religion. You need all religions. And so they literally round up like, get me a priest, a rabbi. Like they literally, yeah.
And a brown paper bag.
They get like, yeah, they get, you know, they get people from, and, you know, they get
so it's like the voodoo, Avengers of
yeah, witch
religions.
Doctor. Yeah, it's the Avengers, but it's
get
just,
me the Pope.
But you're sort of watching
you're
this.
You're going to get me the Pope?
And these two girls have
and
been.
And a mufti.
And I'm like, this is terrible. Like who's it, like, yeah. Who's made the decision to strap two teenage girls to a chair who get surrounded by adults who should
but
know
aren't
better?
They, but also, aren't, isn't.
What?
I mean, okay.
Go. No.
So many questions.
Yes.
But isn't the premise of The Exorcist that they're possessed by Satan, right?
Satan, yeah.
Which is a. Satan, I mean.
Is a Catholic.
Right.
Invention.
Well, specifically.
Well,
so
Will,
is,
in many painful monologues you'll have to endure watching The Exorcist Bleed, you'll find out that evil takes many forms.
Oh, are you and talking about like the movie The Expositionist?
The Expositionist. I mean, it's just. It, like the setup is so good for a horror film, and you're like, oh, this could be a really interesting metaphor for, like, you know, teenage angst and, you know, the struggles of fatherhood and stuff. And then it just becomes like action packed, like, how can we make heads twist and all this kind of stuff? But the idea that the smartest people in the room think the best thing to do for these two girls is to tie them to chairs and, like, hurl abuse at them and, like, douse them in holy water and stuff, it's like, hang on, because the devil's like, you're all fuckheads, get out of here. And I'm like, I agree with the devil. I think this is terrible. I think the devil is not doing anything that bad. He's just hanging out with these teenage girls, not even being, there's no kind of like horrific crucifix masturbation like the original Exorcist film. He's just been a cheeky little chappy hanging out with these girls.
I mean.
But it's the adults.
I'm not sure that you need to be on the side of the devil. Well, I think we can still rule a line at, like, the devil not being good. But
well, look, the whole time I'm like, I think these parents are behaving terribly irresponsibly.
They've overreacted.
They've overreacted. Yeah.
These girls just want to have a little dabble with the devil.
Dabble with the devil. And I don't think they've, because it starts off, the girls get institutionalized. And so I'm like, well, this makes sense. That's the first stop. You would go, what, are they having a mental health breakdown or what's going on here? But I don't think they fully explored that side of things because they put them in the institute and then after about a day, rip them out,
tie
them to a chair
it's
and start
working.
Throwing holy water in and stuff and like
get me the Dalai Lama and a bucket of holy water.
It's so fucking crazy. It's just, it's a terrible film and it's such a shame because it's like, A, the original film is a classic, but B, like, there was a good film in there, but then they turned it into religion Avengers. Let's somehow, and it doesn't actually even, and spoilers, it doesn't even really resolve in a satisfying way where it's like, so what happens is it's the Dark Knight. So what happens is the devil's like, all right, you fucking religious nuts. One girl will live and one will die. You get to choose. And so the parents will say, no one make a choice. The only way we get through this is no one decide to save one of the girls. And so all the parents agree to that. Mm. And then the action rolls on for a bit. And then the fundamentalist Christian dad says, like, Chloe, I choose Chloe. And so you're like, okay, well, Chloe's going to live. But then in Devil World, the devil's like, Chloe, your dad chose you. So he takes Chloe. And so one of the girls dies and the other one lives. And it's like, wait a minute, that doesn't logically make sense. The devil's a liar.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Can't trust the devil.
I get it now.
I think the message is that you can't trust the devil.
Yeah. You can't trust the devil.
And also that if you give in to the devil's impulses, that you're punished by the devil. Like, that's the.
The devil was tempting the father.
Yeah, exactly. And he gave in to temptation and thus was.
Something?
Thus was like
something,
evil.
Something, something.
And then the devil.
I think this is how the script meeting went. And then something and the devil, and you make a choice.
But all the religions are there.
All the religions are there. Oh, and the best part too is so in the original film, Ellen Burstyn plays Christine McNeil, the mother of Reagan. Mm. The possessed girl. And it's an incredible acting performance, tour de force. Like, you just believe the whole time you're watching the film that, like, she is a mother who is just heartbroken about what is happening to her daughter and doesn't understand and is having to watch her daughter go through this horrible ordeal. And so they bring her back as a legacy character in this film. So the dad who's, you know, it's the, I'll talk about the expositionist. his neighbor says, "Hey, I understand your daughter's going through some shit right now. Have you read this book by Christine McNeil?" And he's like, "What's this?" And it's like Christine McNeil, after her original exorcist experience, has written an entire book. And so he seeks out Ellen.
What is the book called? Tell me it's not called The Exorcist.
It's
right?
called like something like Go Fuck the Devil. It's not called that. It's called, can you look it up? Hey, Mike, I can't remember what it's called. It's like something like I Dance with the Devil by the Pale Moonlight.
Or, yeah, okay.
Anyway,
right.
So he seeks her out, and much like Jamie Lee Curtis in the Halloween remake, who this film was directed by the same director, she's living in isolation, mm-hmm. you know, escaping the devil.
Okay.
And what a, like we talk about Ving Rhames getting a payday. What a payday for Ellen Burstyn. Like she's literally, the way they advertise it, she's everywhere.
Hang on. Why is she living in isolation?
Escaping the devil.
But the devil can't find you if
he doesn't have Google Maps.
He's off grid.
So she's living by the beach somewhere to escape the
where
devil.
Where the devil can't find her.
Yeah, exactly. And her big pain is that, like, after Reagan, after she saved Reagan, she wrote a book, and then Reagan got so angry about her writing this book that she has lost contact with her. And all she wants to do is, like, you know, speak to her daughter again. Anyway, so this dad seeks out Christine McNeil and is like, "Hey, I think my daughter's going through the same thing that your daughter went through." And she's like, "Well, you know, I traveled the world and I studied every religion, and evil exists in the world and every religion, and good exists, and exorcism is in a lot of different religions. So there you go." Oh. And he's like, "Could you come back with me to Georgia or wherever they live and help me?" She's like 80 something. And she's like, "Yeah, cool." And so they go back to one of the possessed person's house. Like, she's an old lady, right?
Yeah.
She's not a young priest. No. You know, she's not even a priest, really. Oh, there's a great line about, like, the patriarchy. Yeah. She's like, I didn't actually see the exorcism when they did it to Reagan. I wasn't allowed in the room. Damn patriarchy.
No. Yeah. No, that does not happen. Yeah. Damn patriarchy.
I mean, you thought Barbie slammed the patriarchy? Wait for this one line from Christine McNeil. Anyway, they get to the house where one of the possessed girls is running around, like, you know, causing havoc. And so you've got three fully grown men in the house looking, you know, "Oh, what's happened and where's the girl?" They send the old lady up the stairs, like the oldest, most infirmed of everyone, up the stairs to find the devil girl. And when she finds her, she promptly gets stabbed in the eyes with a crucifix. And this all happens in the space of about 10 minutes. Like, from then introducing Christine McNeil, beloved legacy character from the original film.
No.
They bring her in for some exposition.
They bring her in. Rip her relationship with her daughter from her.
Yeah, the one thing that you love about the original film.
Yeah, that's done.
Done.
They had a falling
out
over the book.
That, like, held that first film together, a mother's love.
You know the whole point of the first movie? Undone.
Yeah. And then they stab her in the eyes with a crucifix.
And then she dies without ever being able to reconcile that relationship.
And then they don't even have, like, the dignity to kill her in some heroic ending. She just gets stabbed in the eyes by this possessed girl. And then she spends, like, the rest of the film in a hospital bed, like, blindfolded, going, "Who's there? Like, who's that? Who's walked into my room?"
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Does Reagan walk back in?
She does.
Oh, thank God.
That's a little post-credit sequence. Right. She comes in and hugs her mum.
So puts a pillow over her.
And she's, "I'm still possessed." It's been 40 years. Played the long game.
The possessed on the down low for 40 years. It's just, the possession's like herpes. It's always in your system, even if you're not having a flare up.
Would you like the title of the book? It's called A Mother's Explanation, The Journey from Possession to Now, with just a big photo of, like, an old headshot of her.
An old acting headshot.
Yeah.
Ellen Burstyn's acting headshot. So it's called what? Mother's Explanation.
A Mother's Explanation.
I mean, even the title of the bullshit book is exposition.
Yeah.
A Mother's Explanation.
Can I read an amazing quote to you guys in relation to this movie?
Okay.
Yes, please.
This is apparently William Friedkin, the director of the original Exorcist, said
recently,
this.
Recently deceased.
Yes, just
rubbing shoulders with the devil now,
To a critic, he said, "The guy who made these new Halloweens is about to make one to my movie, The Exorcist. That's right, my signature film is about to be extended by the man who made Pineapple Express." I don't want to be around when that happens. But if there's a spirit world and I come back, I plan to possess David Gordon Green and make his life a living hell.
Now that's a movie I want to see.
I mean, I hope that's true. That sounds so good.
It sounds very William Friedkin, yeah. Or at least Tony Martin's impression of William Friedkin. All right, okay. One last movie review. The Holdovers, which is an Alexander Payne movie starring Paul Giamatti.
But not written by Alexander Payne.
Oh, was it not?
No.
Oh.
Because I love Alexander Payne movies.
Too.
And I like him with Paul Giamatti as well, so I'm looking forward to seeing this movie. But I did do a little bit of reading about it, and it's based on someone else wrote it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. My one-line review, we need more Paul Giamatti's and less Jared Leto's.
Mm-hmm. Is Jared Leto in?
No.
Oh.
And he shouldn't be ever in another film ever. Well, what I mean by this is that, you know, Jared Leto, who gets so like, well, was at one point so lauded for his transformations and stuff. And it's so, the artifice is so evident when Jared Leto does something. Then you watch Paul Giamatti in this film. Mm. And it's not Paul Giamatti as you know Paul Giamatti. It's like a character.
Yeah.
But it's so subtle and beautifully observed. And like, you know, there's a little bit of kind of prosthetics and there's a little bit of this going on and that going on. But it's like you just fully forget that you're watching Paul Giamatti. And he becomes this like high school professor or this boarding school professor. It's such a good movie.
Did you ever watch Billions?
No.
So Billions was one of those shows that like – it's so enjoyable, but the only thing that makes it feel like a prestige show is Paul Giamatti.
Right.
And then if there was another actor who did not have the skill of him in this sort of, it's one of those shows where you're like, you feel like you're watching like a big, juicy, like shiny blockbuster most of the time.
Yeah.
And then just Paul Giamatti will be in it and you're like, oh, is this a really good show?
Yeah.
And you're like, I think he's the only thing that was constantly fooling me into going, I reckon this is a really good show. And then when he wasn't in Saints, you'd be like, is this a good show?
He's magnetic.
Yeah, he's
like
very good.
In the best possible way. Like sometimes an actor is really good, but it's kind of, they sort of pull you out of what they're in. Whereas he is just so good as this character. And I mean, the actual premise, you know, is not anything new. Like it's three kind of misfits are brought together over this 2-week period and they don't seem to get along, but by the end of the film, you know, they're going to find some common ground and stuff. So that's nothing new, but it's just the character is so, I don't know if it's even unlikable, but just so abrasive and has nothing about him that seems to be kind of like endearing. But then just through this beautiful performance and the humanity that he ekes out, and he doesn't rush it, you know, he's very patient in his performance. You're just like, this fucking dude is possibly the greatest actor.
He's very good at playing someone who on paper is unlikable and giving them some humanity.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because it's not that the person is outwardly abrasive. It's like he's actually quite, you know, charming and stuff, but he hides behind his intellect and his, you know, he's a history teacher and all this kind of stuff. But it's just this, I watched it and it was like, you go from all those films that we've just mentioned to this, you're like, holy shit, there is a gulf. And they used to make lots of these kind of films. Like these used to be the blockbusters, you know, Rain Man was the highest grossing film of 1988, but now we're just like, fuck filmmaking, fuck acting. We just want spectacle.
Yes. I agree with you. So who should Paul Giamatti be in the Marvel Universe?
Well, I think he was. He was Rhino in one of the Spider-Mans.
He was, of course. He was. Right.
But I think only in a cameo.
Yes.
It's such a good movie. Have you seen it, Amy?
I have. I loved The Holdovers.
Yeah, isn't
it
good?
And I thought the newcomer, Dominic Sessa, was absolutely fantastic. And I don't know if you guys ever watched the High Fidelity show, short-lived one, but Devine Joy Randolph was in that, and she's in Only Murders in the Building. I think she's just like fantastic.
The whole cast is amazing, but what's also fantastic about it, it's set in 1969.
Ha ha!
But it feels like 1969. Like they clearly shot it on 35, so it has that grainy quality, and you just sort of, like you just disappear into the film, and there's so many things about it that I'm like, I don't give a fuck about these spoiled, you know, kids in a boarding school in Boston.
Yep, sure.
It's so far from my experience and stuff. But by the end of it, you're like, I feel like I know these people and I feel like I empathize with them. And it's just the whole thing and the ebbs and flows of the characters and what they reveal about themselves. It's just like, I think I've been lured into dumb filmmaking for so long that I've actually forgotten what I enjoy.
Oh no, I think that's right. It's like eating fast food all the time and then you actually just eat
a vegetable.
Nice home cooked like proper food and you're like, this is like really nice.
Yeah.
And I think that definitely when it comes to movies, it feels like that is what has happened. Like I've felt like that, you know, moving off like reading social media all the time and instead trying to read books and stuff is you're like, this is actually better. How did we get conned into
scrolling,
believing? Yes. And because that's what it has become now, right?
Mm.
All this choice, and I go back to that idea of, you know, your first year, like, you know, buying food for yourself out of like home and you start making all those dumb choices because you suddenly have nobody telling you what to do.
Mm.
Is it sometimes like when we get what we think we want, it isn't actually what we want or need?
That's right. Like back in the days, back when we couldn't just skip around from movie to TV show, if we got bored in the first 10 minutes, you'd stick with shit. And then you'd maybe would be surprised by...
Or you would like watch something that you didn't enjoy and then that would be the story.
Yeah.
The story would be about, remember that movie we watched, the blah, 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 that like it was just so ridiculously terrible and that thing happened at the end. Well, that doesn't happen anymore because if you're 15 minutes in and you don't like it, you're like, I don't like the vibe of this.
Speaking of not liking the vibe of this, Will, we're going to go to the letter, the mailbag.
Oh, okay. Does somebody not like the vibe of something we've done?
I don't know. Maybe. I didn't know
if that was like a...
It was a terrible segue.
Okay, it was. Speaking of not liking the vibe of this, Will, you're on tour at the moment. Illegitimate is the name of your tour, comedy.com.au, touring all over Australia and the world. You can check that out. And of course, if you like our podcast, they're all here in the Everyone Relax feed. So make sure that you follow us on this feed so that you can see all the episodes that come out. Philosophies here, Tofot with Friends episodes, Two Guys, One Cup. Our AFL adjacent podcast is back in the feed, which is very exciting.
And footy season starting now.
Maybe now. So anyway, check that out if you would like to have a listen to any of those.
And if you want to be like this listener who's written into us, you can go to everyonerelax.co. There's a little form down there. You can send an email to any of the shows that you like, but if you want it to be read out, this is the only show where we read out mail. listen to Two Guys, One Cup. Yeah,
so send it to this one or Two Guys, One Cup. If you've got philosophy questions, are you even seeing philosophy questions if they come through? Or would they just go to
a philosophy account? I don't think. Okay. I do, but I don't ever check it.
So
we've probably had huge money offers, like Muji, and Limebike, sending
people to that address. They've been asking questions into a void for
I didn't realize it's my job to monitor the philosophy mailbag.
Oh, man, it's probably
I think that was
not.
Podcast
was
Mike's job,
probably,
wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably.
Hey, Mike, do you have access to the philosophy mailbag?
I do not.
Okay, we'll make that happen.
We'll have to work out how to, like...
We'll have to put our mics in contact with each other.
Yeah.
Okay, this is from Maddie. She says, there has been a butter candle hack going around the last couple of weeks. I'd love to see you guys react to the idea since it seems exactly like a Tofop podcast idea.
A butter candle hack.
That's right. That would come from one of your late afternoon recordings. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
More...
Late afternoon recording?
Just more stoned or more... Oh, right. Dumb, like, you know, the more
desperate for material,
just more
tired, running out of things
ridiculous,
to say,
in some weird, ridiculous hole.
Okay, so, we've googled a YouTube video, Will, so you want to turn to that monitor behind you.
Okay,
can you see that? All right, just move your mic around.
Okay. Yep.
Are we going to get audio on this too? Okay, great. All right, so this is a butter candle, so it only takes about 60 seconds.
Have you heard of a butter candle? It's such a fun party appetizer. First, cut out a hole in the middle of the bread to make room for the candle. I use a candle wick and Danish creamery rosemary salt butter because it's made with rich, European quality butter and already seasoned perfectly with specialty herbs. Just melt it, pour into the same cup with the wick inside and freeze for 1 hour. Then cut the cup, slide the candle into the bread and light it up. You can start dipping in about 10 minutes. This is fun and so good.
Did she get censored then? Did she?
Yeah.
That was me. Sorry.
This is so fucking good. Now, when this got sent, I was like, butter candle.
Yep.
I watched that. I'm like, I fucking want to eat a butter candle. What?
You're ruining good butter with all the messing around. This is one of those things that is just all the fuss.
Melted butter in fresh bread. Don't you think that'd be amazing?
Yeah, but you can do that without any of the fuss.
No.
Literally.
This is meant to be for
any of the fuss.
It's for a dinner party.
That has just happened.
It's for a dinner. It's not for you to eat on your own like you do. It's like, that's like.
Put some hot, like some, like butter in a, like tray in the middle of the fucking, and with some oil and some other things and fucking heat up your bread in the oven. You don't need to put some dumb candle in the middle of your, because the bread's not going to be hot or fresh anyway, because that would melt the candle from the outside.
It will be warm. No, it'll be, definitely the warm butter will keep the bread warm.
No, it won't, because it's cooking from the inside of the candle and you're having to dip the, like.
No, I think the idea is. So for people who are only listening, so yeah. She had a round loaf of bread. She carved a hole in the middle of it and stuck the butter candle in the middle. Yeah. But she cut wedges off. So you'll break in a wedge off from that's from the inside.
Yeah.
And so it'll be warm. It'd be warm, melted.
No, it won't be.
Well, if you eat it quick.
So much fuss for so little return. What do you get out of this that you don't get out of just warming up some bread and putting some butter on the table? Just tell me one thing. What?
You don't get that instant melted, like it's garlic bread quality. Like, you know, when you get like garlic bread. In fact, I'll just get some garlic bread.
Oh, I can understand. Like, there's an appeal to me of like, this is kind of a take on that idea of, you know, when they will serve you some melted parmesan, like at a, you know, one of those places where they heat up a block of cheese and they'll put the pasta on the top and they'll like.
That always grosses me out a bit, that.
Well, that's what this is.
It's not really.
It is.
It's nothing like that.
It is exactly like
okay,
that.
Sure.
It's just one of those things that
Gorgonzola,
you're like.
Gorgonzola, I believe.
Here's
isn't
the experience, not so. No, no, you've weighed in with a, Gorgonzola is a type of cheese, and yes, you could probably deal with
Gorgonzola. No?
I don't think, okay. I don't think so.
All right.
I mean, now you've maybe I'm wrong, but I think Gorgonzola is a.
It's a funny word, isn't it, Gorgonzola?
The more.
This is a very late afternoon Topot conversation. All right.
Gee, Gorgonzola is a funny word. That's the end of the podcast.
That is the end of the podcast. We'll both be back next week. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson.
Listener.